Coming up on this week's book show, Jill McCorkle's latest novel, Hieroglyphics, has been called a triumph, one that explores the physical and emotional imprints that make up a life. It reveals the difficulty of ever really knowing the intentions and dreams and secrets of the people who raised you. Jill McCorkle on this week's book show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Jill McCorkle's latest novel, Hieroglyphics, has been called a triumph, one that explores the physical and emotional imprints that make up a life. It reveals the difficulty of ever really knowing the intentions and dreams and secrets of the people who raised you. McCorkle deconstructs and reconstructs what it means to be a father or a mother, and what it means to be a child piecing together the world all around us, a child learning to make sense of the hieroglyphics of history and memory. Jill McCorkle's first two novels were released simultaneously when she was just out of college. The New York Times called her a born novelist. Since then, she has published six novels and four collections of short stories. Again, the latest is entitled Hieroglyphics, a novel, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Jill McCorkle to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
I love this book, and it was spectacular. I'm interested in the idea that you had for it of thinking of this in terms of hieroglyphics, that our lives and what we know about each other can be put into that term.
Yes, I in the beginning, I was thinking a lot about language and all the different ways we communicate with one another, the way that we often have a shorthand with people we're close to. You say one word and a whole story's conjured. And so I was thinking about what gets left behind, if not explained in some way for the future, and just all that we leave behind that might be unable to be deciphered in the future. And that led me, aside from just thinking of actual language and codes that we have in life, I was thinking of all those little tokens, objects, scars left on the landscape, or even within our homes, that also represent stories, histories that get lost along the way or certainly stand to.
The story is told from many different perspectives. Let us talk at first about Will and Frank. They married very young. They both had lost a parent when they were children. And you do this exploration of them trying to understand the parents that they lost prematurely. Talk a little bit about them as a couple and the draw of what it was that brought them together.
Yes, well, their children have always said they were a match made in tragedy. And I think because they both lost a parent in childhood, they grew up much faster than they would have. And so they really do bond in the beginning in that way. And then, of course, grow apart and back together and apart and back together in many other ways over the years. But I think it was the trauma of losing a parent and not having the whole story or answer. Lil's mother went out one night, you know, saying she'll be back, and they didn't know that she was going to the Coconut Grove nightclub. And so, of course, that whole night and how her mother's life ended remains a kind of mystery. And similarly, Frank's father was on a train heading north and in a catastrophic train accident. And a very similar story, you know, it's a question of fate and how life might have played out differently if these parents had come home instead of just stopping and changing life. They're both really dealing with that traumatic event that marked the before and the after, and it really has defined both lives.
Lil writes early in the novel, "We are all haunted by something, something we did or didn't do, and the passing years either add to the weight or diminish it. Mine have diminished, perhaps because I've spent time thinking about it all. It might sound silly, but I see these bits and pieces as my contribution to evolution, the unearthing and dusting of the prints and markers that led me here. Some seem to bulldoze right through life and up to their headstones, but I want to take my time. I want to find the right words." Lil, throughout this novel, is the one who is so open and so exploratory in feeling and emotion and explanation, right? Of trying to tell those who are reading these letters what had happened.
Yes, absolutely. And in many ways, she is editing her life. I mean, she's coming to terms with many parts of her life, but she's also actively sort of musing back and forth what she wants her children to know. So there's the kind of hidden history on top of what she does most definitely want them to know and remember.
And it's the only first person in the novel.
Yes.
Which makes that voice so personal, because you sense that she's writing it to you as well as the reader.
So much of the novel is about memory and the way we remember. And so for Lil, since she's sifting and sorting and going through all of these events, by having her in first person, it gave that immediate presence to everything that had happened long ago in the past. And so I really enjoyed exploring her voice at different ages, because you find a letter and, you know, we're not thinking of the much older person that person becomes. That you have words on a page that bring to life the voice of that much younger person living a particular time in life.
I'm glad you brought that up, because it was something that I had noted in the novel, that in these letters of writing in one chapter, in one section, in a matter of 5 or 6 pages, there could be a letter from 1969, from 1994 to 2017. What was the challenge in writing those letters? I mean, you have to know that character so well to be able to go into that those time periods and the various crevices of their life.
Yes, and that was the challenge. I think the putting together of the novel was the ultimate challenge. I wrote the parts not necessarily in the order that they were going to appear in the book. I think that her character developed in more organic ways for me. So many of them I was writing in a kind of chronological order, knowing that I then wanted within the manuscript for those memories to be mixed up in a more organic way, that she would be remembering things.
Jill McCorkle is our guest on this week's book show. The new novel is Hieroglyphics. It is published by Algonquin. So Lil is married to Frank, as I mentioned, and we meet Frank, who is early on in the book really obsessed with what might have been left behind at the house that he lived in as a boy. Living in that house is a young single mother, Shelley, and her son, Harvey. Tell us about Frank and about that obsession.
Frank is someone who spent many years teaching archaeology courses, and he has always had an interest in the digs and what's found. But in his own personal life, he's done a pretty good job at compartmentalizing and not looking at the painful parts until these later years when they have retired in North Carolina and Lil has urged him to revisit this place. He lived part of his boyhood. So now he is obsessed with getting there and walking around in the backyard where he had stashed a lot of things that he had collected as a child. So I really was thinking of the connection Frank had as a boy to where Shelley's son Harvey is now, because they're both playing and collecting in the same place. And I read at one point, read about how whenever there's a dig around a school or an orphanage, they almost always find these little caches of toys and things that children take and hide as a way of, you know, saying I was here or protecting what's important. And I saw that as the bridge between the generations of Frank, who's old enough to be Harvey's grandfather. And yet it's almost like stacked time. You know, Harvey is living on top of where Frank once lived.
Did you always intend for Harvey and Shelley to be major characters in the novel?
No, and for a long time, I wasn't sure how these people would connect, and it was finding that physical place of this yard of childhood that connected Frank and Harvey. But I think that what all the characters do have in common is this need to somehow reconcile what has happened with their parents and their relationship with their parent. Harvey's dad has left, so his mind is full of sort of creating the reasons or trying to understand. And Shelley is just, she's someone really struggling just to hang in there. And she really wants to be a good mother, despite living through a difficult time. So I think the novel is a lot about the relationship a child has to his or her parents.
And the relationship between Harvey and Shelley gave you an opportunity to have a, if you will, a contemporary relationship to compare the one that Lil and Frank have with their children.
Yes. And it also allowed me, my previous novel, Life After Life, ended with a murder that I let go unsolved. It seemed completely realistic to me because, unfortunately, it happens that way. And there are those people who disappear from our society. But I had a lot of readers wanting me to bring justice. So Shelley kind of grew with the idea that here she is a court stenographer. And so in the background, there is the trial that solves the crime committed in the earlier novel. And so it was a way to, you know, continue to work with language and history. Shelley herself is hiding from her own history. And there's a lot that gets unearthed along the way there.
This idea of unearthing and the idea of memory and storytelling and what is handed down is so universal, and yet it seems that when it comes to us, it's almost always a surprise.
Yeah, I got surprised along the way in writing it, actually, which is always exciting when it happens. But I do think that oftentimes, you know, we overlook these simple parts of our lives, and they only take on more and more weight and meaning as time passes. I'm thinking in particular, you know, Lil comes across a grocery store receipt where she sees that she had both bought baby food and the shaving cream that her father used. And at that time, she probably would have just balled it up and thrown it away. But now, years later, she's looking at it, and it now stands as a symbol for all those years that you're suspended between these two worlds, you know, actively both a daughter and a mother. And the way we get caught up in our daily lives and sometimes forget the big picture. What I think attracted me initially to these historical tragic events that are in the background of their parents' lives is the way that in both cases, the events became that before and after of a community and all the lives affected. But also in both cases, there were generated catalogs of lists where individuals were identified or connected to their loved ones with just the simplest objects, you know, the thing that you put in your pocket and you don't even think about, or the tag in a coat, or where you bought that coat, or an earring. And so along with, you know, these words that we say or don't say or that we abbreviate, I was thinking of those tokens, those objects that basically say, I was here, you know. And in the moment, we don't think about the, you know, the hook on the back of a dress or the button of a coat.
Jill McCorkle is our guest on this week's book show. The new novel is Hieroglyphics. It is published by Algonquin. Lil is so honest in her writing and in the writing of these letters, and honest to the point of being very frank as to her feelings about her children and what they've done and how they've led their lives, which, assuming, and she sets this out very early as to who will be reading these and when and wondering how that will go. But you can only assume that the recipient would be devastated by that in some cases, by how a parent feels about a child and the decisions they've made in their lives.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that part of her going through is with that in mind. I mean, how much do you give and how much do you spare? I mean, she clearly has been disappointed in some of her son's relationships and his choices. And Yeah, and just moments from their childhood, you know, that she looks back on, that, you know, where their failures as well as their successes, for sure. And, but I think she's someone, you know, just desperately seeking the whole picture. So there is the negative flip of that.
And what I loved about the letters is they don't come off as authoritarian in the sense of this is what you were thinking. She's asking questions. She's exploring even in the writing of the letters. I wonder if when you did this, this connected to when you did that much later.
Yes. And I think she, as a parent, is feeling that responsibility that I think most parents do. You know, there's always the question, could I have done something differently? And there's a lot of that in the novel, the questioning of the way events unfold. And do we have the power to have done it differently? Would this little change have changed the ultimate picture?
You mentioned earlier that you didn't necessarily write this in a linear fashion. So what was it like to construct it? What was it like to then put it together to what we read now as the novel?
I used the analogy of Marie Kondo with a student just the other day. I said, yes, you want to spark joy, but it starts with taking absolutely everything and putting it in a great big messy heap on the bed. And I feel like that's what I did. I feel like I spent years creating this big messy heap of memories and little snippets of lives that I hoped would connect. And then it was like shaking out each piece and examining it and thinking about how it fit into the bigger picture. And it was a challenge, but exciting to do that. And I have to give my editor, Kathy Porries, a tip of the hat here, because it was great fun working with her on that final version. I think I started the novel with every character at least once. because it's the kind of novel that, the plot of the present day time is felt to me the least of it when I was writing it. And yet that timeline becomes very important in the way the very short space in present time plays out. It was exciting for me to work on it. It was really a challenge, but yeah, it was a mess for a long time.
Do you usually write in such a quote unquote messy fashion, or is that unusual for you?
You know, I think I have gotten messier and messier. I love short stories and I love to work on stories in between novels. And there's something about just the compression of a scene or a memory that I find very satisfying to write something like that, not necessarily knowing where it's going to go. I think for a long time I waited until I knew where it was going to go. And lately, you know, I just feel like, oh, I better write that or I might lose it. and so I go ahead and write those passages. And so this novel, like Life After Life, it felt like a lot of broken parts, because I was more drawn to the act of memory and the way that we recall past events, you know, which is pretty scary when, you know, the past is overwhelming the present. You know, you hear a lot of people say, oh no, backstory. and I felt I was writing so much backstory, but to me it was all so important to where these people are in their present lives. I mean, Lil is going to shine a flashlight and search every dark corner and not be satisfied until she has, you know, swept the cobwebs clean. Frank has compartmentalized. Shelley has just run like a mad woman and locked and barred all the doors. And then you have a child who, with the exception of the hurt of this parent leaving, he's the future. You know, he's everything is stretching out in front of him. So I was thinking of them all as where they fit on that timeline, a human life.
And it really does, through that character of Harvey, of, and you're writing about this almost constantly, but really to see what impact these events that he's living through have on him at the moment and most likely will have on him in the future.
Definitely. I mean, he's got a lot of hobbies. He was fun to work on. I gave him sort of many folklore tales of North Carolina. But he also has an older brother who has kind of told him about Lizzie Borden, the Menendez brothers, you name it.
Right.
He's well versed in some dark subject matter.
You mentioned early about the mystery that you finally solved in this novel. Was that a moment where you thought of that there are things that you like to bring from one novel to the next, or is it something that you say, okay, there's something I'll never do again?
No, you know, I find it very satisfying because I always sort of feel like these people keep living their lives, and I've done it before where I've dipped back and had someone make a little cameo. You know, not that a few people notice. Sometimes I may be the only person noticing, but for me, these characters, they just keep aging and moving. I don't feel they end when the book ends. So it was kind of fun for me. I have all these people who lived in the retirement facility of Life After Life. They're basically riding a van over to watch the trial,
right,
like theater. So it was kind of fun to put them there.
So if we read about an older Harvey at some point, that wouldn't be surprising, I guess.
No, I can totally see checking back in with Shelley and Harvey.
The name of the new novel is Hieroglyphics. It is published by Algonquin. Jill McCorkle, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for taking your time and for talking to us.
Thank you so much. A real pleasure to be here.
Again, Jill McCorkle's new novel is Hieroglyphics. It is published by Algonquin. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.